Thank you for downloading this programme from the BBC. In this edition of Profile, Leslie Kirwin looks at the life and career of Nicola Sturgeon, key figure in the Scottish push for independence.
The Place, a small, chilly country in Northern Europe. The Star, a powerful, ambitious female politician who dresses in neat suits and outsmarts difficult male colleagues. Is it the Denmark of the hit TV series Borgen? Or could it be Scotland, where Nicola Sturgeon, who's a huge fan of Borgen, is a rising political star?
I think she sees a lot of what she hopes an independent Scotland would be like, which is chiefly a bunch of sort of idealistic social democratic politicians cutting deals with other social democrats, freezing out wicked right wingers and generally marching around the corridors of power, doing good deeds and enjoying themselves.
She even made time to watch Borgen in the run-up to this crucial week for her party, with the launch of a blueprint for independence called Scotland's Future.
Today's publication changes the dynamic of this debate. The challenge is now for those who oppose independence to move beyond Project Fear and give us their vision for Scotland's future and to answer the important questions about what happens to Scotland if we don't vote yes.
In this week's Profile, I'll be looking at why Nicola Sturgeon, number two to Alex Salmond, has herself become a key player in the unfolding drama which could see the United Kingdom carved up.
As soon as Nicola was appointed to be the new Constitution Minister by Alex Salmond, that sent a very powerful signal, I think, to people across Scotland, but certainly to us in the UK government, that the Scottish government was now ramping up its importance attached to this, that they were serious about getting an agreement between the two governments.
Nicola Sturgeon was born in 1970 in Irvine in North Ayrshire. Her father was an engineer, while her mother stayed at home to look after Nicola and her sister. She was a serious, bookish child who was drawn to politics early on and chose the Scottish National Party, as her mother Joan explains.
We had a local activist living fairly close, a friend of the family, and Nicola was able to tap into her and she started campaigning from the age of 16. It came as no surprise. We were all Scottish National voters in our household, and I have to add, even her English grandmother voted SNP in elections, so it came as no surprise.
With Scotland in a ferment against the poll tax, she became a campaigner in the youth wing of the party. Fiona Hislop, now Scottish Cabinet Secretary for Culture, remembers the earnest young SNP campaigner.
I remember celebrating when we reached double figures in the opinion polls. I mean, that's how long ago it is. You did not join the SNP for a career in politics. You joined because you felt passionately about what you wanted to achieve.
Did you ever go out with her outside politics? Were you friends?
Yes, we would. And obviously at that time in particular, a lot of the campaigning would end up at parties or in clubs or indeed pubs after events. And that's what you did when you were in your 20s. And Nicola was as involved in the social side as anybody else.
Is she able to let her hair down?
Yes, she's got a very, very good, strong sense of humour. But she was always quite guarded and to make sure that she didn't do or say anything that perhaps would cause difficulty later. So she was always in that sense very sensible, but good fun.
After studying law and working as a solicitor, Nicola Sturgeon tried and failed to win a Westminster seat for the SNP. Then, at the age of 29, she became a member of the Scottish Parliament and a protégé of Alex Salmond. But you couldn't call it a meteoric rise. Initially, she was struggling to make her way in a party ill at ease and still unready for power, as she later admitted.
I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, has been to my advantage is that the SNP had, over the past couple of years, torn itself apart to the point that everybody was just thoroughly sick of the infighting. And you know, people, whatever their positions had been, were beginning to realise that if we carried on like this, we were going to only go in one direction.
Her biggest decision so far came in 2004. Alex Salmond had stood down. His replacement, John Swinney, had been unsuccessful. The party was drifting helplessly. Nicola Sturgeon decided to stand for the leadership. Suddenly, Mr. Salmond burst back onto the scene and suggested she run as his deputy instead. It's talked about by the SNP today as a seamless transition. In fact, her decision wasn't made quickly. as she admitted in an interview shortly afterwards with BBC Radio Scotland.
There was no hesitation in making that decision.
Yes, there was. She asked him for a few days to think about it.
Yeah, I thought about it, but, you know, once I'd thought about it, once I'd sort of, you know, mulled it over, I came to what my instinctive position had been. One thing I can be accused of by detractors is being very ambitious, but my ambition is ultimately for my party to succeed.
The SNP was now reconciling itself with devolution, realising its leaders needed to make a reputation as competent potential governors. In 2007, their chance came. They led a minority government and Nicola Sturgeon became Deputy First Minister with responsibilities including health. She's someone who lives and breathes politics, has done since she was 16. So is there time for anything else? Well, she got married in 2010, married into the party, to Peter Murrell, its chief executive. They have no children as yet. She is devoted to work, though her mother Joan says she does find ways to relax.
She is a huge fan of X Factor and she makes no secret of it. She relaxes with her husband. They enjoy time together. Reading. Reading is her great love. Always has been from a very young child. She can relax. There's always one eye on the phone, but I think she's fairly relaxed.
And does she switch the phone off when she's with you?
No. The phone is never switched off. Many of my family can vouch for that.
Perhaps the one time she won't answer the phone is when that Danish TV series Borgen is on, with its portrait of a feisty female politician. Nicola Sturgeon is such a fan, it's almost obsessive. Looking forward to some Borgen relaxation, she tweeted recently. Almost her only tweet that's not deadly serious stuff about politics and independence. Scottish political journalist and author David Torrance.
Her fandom of Borgen has actually reached rather extraordinary levels. For example, a few months ago when the leading lady from Borgen agreed to come to Edinburgh to launch the new series, Nicola Sturgeon lobbied quite hard, and indeed correspondence released under FOI later revealed the extent of this lobbying. She lobbied quite hard to personally chair that Q&A with the actress and posed for lots of photographs and so on, which is a rather curious thing for a cabinet minister to be doing.
In the TV world of Borgen, the female politician spends her days dealing with overbearing men. The SNP realised long ago it had a problem attracting women voters, who are not turned on by its tribal appeal or the aggressive debating style of its master tactician, Alex Salmond. He's been Nicola Sturgeon's mentor and supporter, but how do they work together? Does she keep him in check? We got some clues when Alex Salmond appeared on Woman's Hour.
I've often wondered when I've watched her performing how important to kind of softening your image as a bit of a bruiser is she as your sidekick?
I wouldn't disagree that she's given me some pretty stern advice on that occasionally, and it's absolutely true. I mean, you know, I think that lots and lots of male politicians can forget that there's a bit more to politics and life than enjoying the cut and thrust of debate. And Nicola is a very strong corrective sometimes of my, I don't know, love of the cut and thrust.
Nicola Sturgeon has also become prominent in an arena far from that public cut and thrust of partisan politics. The nuts and bolts, behind closed doors, but vital relationship between London and Edinburgh. You may not know it, but UK ministers regularly meet with Scottish ministers to thrash out practicalities, sometimes dealing with more bizarre subjects.
The pair of us had the undoubted privilege of welcoming the pandas to Scotland and had to stand on a very, very cold Edinburgh runway waiting for the pandas to arrive in from China, rehearsing some Mandarin Chinese. Now, if one of your colleagues had got the tape running at that point, you'd have had clips to keep you in business forever. She does have a lighter side. It was good fun, but most of the time it's very serious business.
That's Liberal Democrat Michael Moore, former Secretary of State for Scotland in the coalition government. Last year, he was heading the UK team in the very technical and sensitive negotiations over the form and timing of the referendum on independence. It was Nicola Sturgeon's arrival as head negotiator on the Scottish side that got things moving.
Nicola's appointment was a very strong signal that this was now serious and that she had the authority, unlike her predecessor, to negotiate an agreement.
How would you describe her as a negotiator?
She is straightforward once you understand where she's coming from, and once I think she's assessed that the person she's dealing with, I like to think this was true of me, is dealing with her in a straightforward manner. I think that the basic understanding that there were core principles on either side that we each had to respect, that there was a package that could be put around that, but we had to be really careful at thinking it through. Within that space, and with a complete commitment to confidentiality, which was really important for both of us, the trust that is essential in any negotiation, having established that, that worked all the way through.
If there were to be a yes vote, there would need to be some very tricky negotiations, wouldn't there, between Edinburgh and London. Can you imagine Nicola Sturgeon would be the chief negotiator?
You're asking me to jump a few fences there in terms of the hypotheticals. It is a big if about us voting to become independent. But let's put it this way. The idea that in any such situation, Nicola Sturgeon wouldn't be a very big part in it would be silly.
The next 10 months will be a crucial period for Nicola Sturgeon, who's been working up to this moment all her adult life. Her mother, Joan, who is also an SNP councillor, is aware of the pressures that will bring.
As her mother, I worry about her. I worry about the amount of pressure. I believe we will get a yes vote next September. I believe it, in no small part, will be down to Nicola, also to many, many other people. We worry if she sounds tired. We worry when she gets stressed. But basically, she's capable of this. She will handle whatever comes.
Nicola Sturgeon is shaping the way Scottish independence is presented to voters. The SNP vision claims to be all about practical social justice, better childcare and public services. It's not a tartan-hued Braveheart vision anymore, according to her political opponent, the former Scottish Secretary Michael Moore.
Nicola is part of a generation of SNP politicians, it seems to me, who are about competence and pragmatism. They're not without their flaws, and it's important to remember that there are big issues here in Scotland about the way they run the country, but they are very committed to a pragmatic approach, it seems to me. So for that reason, they can be quite challenging to deal with, but that doesn't mean to say that we, their opponents, can't find the holes and the flaws, and we'll continue to do that.
Consider the positive opportunities that independence offers our country. Compare and contrast it with the relentless negativity of the other side and make up your own mind.
If she can survive next year's test, her influence on Scottish politics looks to be guaranteed. I asked political journalist David Torrance, how ambitious is she?
She certainly sees herself as the next leader of the SNP and certainly as the next First Minister of Scotland, the first female First Minister of Scotland. Now, when she joined the party, of course, in the mid-80s, the prospect of being a Member of Parliament was a remote one. Being a minister was unthinkable. And being First Minister, the person running Scotland would have been considered pie in the sky, and indeed the young Nicola Sturgeon would have considered it such. But with the creation of the Scottish Parliament, with the growth in support for independence, and now a referendum which could give rise to independence, the prospects for an ambitious, articulate, relatively young member of the SNP are almost limitless.
Nicola Sturgeon's timing couldn't have been better. She's ridden the wave of Scottish political history, a wave that's opened up all kinds of chances for nationalist politicians. Can it continue? The coming year's dramas will show us how far she and her party can go.
Profile was presented by Leslie Kerwin and produced by Chris Bowlby.